Well, as this is coming up, I want to talk about my title. I do have a question mark in my title because one of the big issues in chlamydia is what's happening with it. And I'm going to present to you a variety of data sources. But as opposed to waiting until later, I am going to go ahead and talk about the interpretation challenges now. Chlamydia, as you probably all know, has substantial challenges in interpretation, including lab test changes. We have newer laboratory tests that have increased sensitivity superior to those tests that were used earlier in the epidemic. There's also a problem with under-detection and under-reporting. And this is a little bit of an older estimate, but it still illustrates the problems with the different numbers of actual cases, which we estimate to be 2.8 million versus those reported, just over 709,000. We know that there are different screening rates across the areas of the country, as well as the application of screening criteria. And just to remind everyone, the CDC screening criteria are to screen all sexually active women under 26 years of age annually. So I'd like to start by giving a case example of some of the interpretation challenges. This graph shows the median state-specific chlamydia prevalence by year among women entering the National Job Training Program from 1998 to 2006. And this is women aged 16 to 24, I'm sorry about that. And you see here that we saw a fairly steady decline until a significant uptick from 2005 to 2006. When we looked at that a little bit further, we saw that there was a significant test type change. In 2005, 27% of their tests were nucleic acid amplification tests, also called NATs, as opposed to 2006 when 89% of all of their tests were NATs. When we looked at this a little bit further, we looked at the distribution of test types used in the National Job Training Program and saw that in 2000, the predominant test used was the GenPro PACE II DNA hybridization test, which remained the predominant test until 2005, when more NATs were used, and then 2006, again, the drastic increase that I showed you on the previous slide. So what we did, and that was again to the BD probe tech, and you'll see that there are two different BD probe techs listed, urine and cervix. That just is a difference in specimen. So what we did is we stratified by test type. And we saw that, lo and behold, if you look at that GenPro PACE II line, you do continue to see a decline even from 2005 to 2006. So this is just an example of the extreme difficulties in interpreting chlamydia data. So as I go forward, just think about some of these issues in looking at the data. So I'm going to start by showing you our case report data. Here we see chlamydia rates by sex in the United States from 1987 to 2006. And as usual, we have a couple issues that come up. Well, chlamydia was made notifiable in 1995 and all 50 states reported by 2000, which surely impacts the curve. The infertility prevention program, the pilot study that led to that program was begun in 1988. And that program was expanded nationwide in 1993 and 1995. So again, a significant number of cases were reported as a result of this program. Well, all of this led to case rates in 2006 of 515.8 among women per 100,000 women and 173 per 100,000 men. As John Douglas mentioned, this was the first time we were over a million cases. But this is with all those caveats I just mentioned and all that other stuff on the slide. In 2007, just to give you an idea of what it looks like, you know, we do see increasing case rates in both men and women and an increasing number of cases reported, and this is as of February 16th. Briefly, I want to show you some rates by race, ethnicity, as John mentioned. One of the things we talk about a lot in our division is racial disparities. So from 1997 to 2006, we see fairly significant disparities, but consistent disparities. Blacks are 8 times more likely than whites to have a reported case of chlamydia. And you can see there the case rates. When we break those data down a little bit more, this is by race and sex in the United States from 2001 to 2006, we see disparities as well. But this, I think, is particularly interesting because what you see here are that black women are 7 times more likely than white women to have a reported case of chlamydia. Black men are 11 times more likely than black than white men to have a reported case of chlamydia, but also black men are 3 times more likely than white women to have a reported case of chlamydia. Moving on to age and sex-specific rates in the United States in 2006, as we've seen in the past, this is nothing new. We see a little bit different distribution of disease between men and women. In women, the highest case rate is among those women aged 15 to 19 at 2,800 per 100,000 women. And if you translate that, that's 2.8 cases per 100 women in that particular age group. Men have a little bit different distribution. Older men, aged 20 to 24, have the highest case rate at 856.9. And just briefly, John also mentioned this morning, the number of cases that are being reported to us in private sector settings is increasing, or non-STD clinic settings is increasing over time. I'm going to talk a little bit more now about the infertility prevention program data. This is an extremely robust data source and with a lot of data, which again makes it difficult to interpret. I hate to keep saying that, but it's the truth. From 2001 to 2006, we've seen almost 500,000 more tests than an increase from 2001 to 2006. And now we have almost 3.4 million tests coming into us. And most of those tests are done with nucleic acid amplification tests. This is a breakdown by region. IPP is administered through 10 regions of the United States. And you can see that all regions but one are above 50%, and most are above 70%. And this is also a slide you saw from John. This shows trends in positivity among 15 to 24-year-old women tested in family planning clinics by region from 2002 to 2006. And as John pointed out, there's not a lot to talk about on this slide. Not a lot is happening with positivity rates across the country. This shows the median state-specific positivity among 15 to 24-year-old women tested in family planning clinics. Again, this is IPP data. In 1997, we saw a median positivity rate of 5.1% with a range of 2 to 11.2. And this has increased to 6.7 in 2006. But that increase may be due to changes in test technology. Briefly, some other data. There was a paper published in 2007 looking at data in the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey and NHANES. Here I show that data by race, ethnicity, and again you see the same disparities that we see across case report data, with black females having a prevalence rate of 7.2% and black men having a prevalence rate of 5.3%. And this is a general population-based sample, so this does not represent healthcare-seeking individuals, which shows you the burden of disease in the general population. Our highest estimates of chlamydia are in the correctional setting, where we see young women having 19.1% positivity rate and men having a 10.3% positivity rate, although the positivity rate is significant even in older ages. Briefly, chlamydia screening coverage is something we talk about a lot. HEDIS, the Healthcare Effectiveness Data and Information Set, implemented a measure to look at chlamydia screening coverage in 2000. 90% of all managed care organizations do report on HEDIS measures. And what we see here are trends upward in coverage, but still a substantially low coverage rate, about 50% in the best population, which is the Medicaid population. So in summary, as you probably got from this talk, interpretation of chlamydia data is difficult. Chlamydia rates are, take your pick, decreasing, flat, increasing. It just depends on the interpretation. Chlamydia point estimates, though, are extremely high, as evidenced by NHANES, and we do see those estimates in the detainee population that are extremely high. Race ethnicity disparities are present and persistent, and chlamydia screening rates are on the rise, but are still very low. Thank you. Any questions? It's also clear. Thank you. Oh, sorry, I can see. I'll repeat your question.
Hi, I'm Judy Walsh. I really enjoyed this presentation. Thank you. I think that one slide that you showed of the infertility prevention program about which you and Helen said maybe there's not much to talk about was actually the slide about which we most need to talk, perhaps, for two reasons. And my two questions are, number one, why do you think in regions 4 and 6 the prevalence is, those are the regions with the higher prevalence compared to the other regions? Why do you think that is? And you're moving fairly fast. I don't know how that relates to the testing, the types of tests that are used, but I'd like you to comment on that.
Sure.
And then I think that the key question from the standpoint of the division is how we get below the 6 to 11% prevalence that we're seeing at which things seem to have stabilized. And, you know, there's got to be a way to do that.
Okay. So the first question, and just let me make sure I rephrase these correctly for the record, is to look at regions 4 and 6 because they have the highest prevalence and also what impact might test type have in those regions. 4 and 6 are in the south part of the United States where we traditionally see higher disease rates anyway. So I think it's reflective of disease burden rather than actually program activities. Endemic disease burden. The test type question is actually a good one because region 6 is actually the lowest, the region with the lowest usage of NAT tests. So their rate is more impacted by test type changes than other regions that have a higher saturation point of NAT usage. Region 4, I don't recall, I think they have a higher NAT usage than region 6, but I do think that in essence, the prevalence rates, the positivity rates you see reflected on that slide are an example of where the disease burden is historically the highest. And the second question you had about what we should do to get the positivity rate or the prevalence rate lower so we can break that cycle of the flat prevalence. We are doing a couple of things right now in the division, one of which is to work with a mathematical modeler to look at the impact or the possible impact of different prevention strategies, including increasing screening coverage, increasing partner notification rates, how does male screening factor into these things. So I don't have an answer for that, but we are pursuing it in that avenue, certainly, as well as looking at other local examples of where things may have worked. Sorry, I don't know who was first. Yeah, I think our case report, the NHANES data seem to have a lower racial disparity than the case report data. The NHANES data are a true population-based sample, whereas the case report data are diagnosed cases that are reported to us, and oftentimes, despite the differences in where the cases are being reported to us, they're more probably more likely to be reported in a public setting, and we know that lower socioeconomic status, including Black men and women, tend to go to publicly funded clinics.
How big of an effect is that? I mean, I'm just curious to look at the
The question was, how great of an effect is that in terms of the where the population is seeking health care? So the question was, if the data is severely biased, how should we be cautious in interpreting the data? I agree that we do need to be cautious, but I think one thing that's clear is there is a disparity, and we may not know the magnitude of that disparity for certain looking at the case report data. So I'm not sure how much we need to take the numbers themselves into account, but I think that the disparity is present shouldn't be disputed. Not that you're disputing it.
I think it also stigmatizes them, and I think we need to be careful with that. I don't care enough for that.
Okay.
And I think it would be really helpful if you could somehow assess how large of a bias are you showing in your data, so that one could have
So CDC needs to assess how large of a bias there is, particularly in comparing NHANES to case report data. Okay, thank you. Sorry. That is something we would love to know more about. The question was, do we know anything about the denominator of missed opportunities for screening? Is that correct? I think, first of all, I think there are other presentations here, even at this conference, that are discussing that issue. I know that our colleagues in the Health Services and Research Branch are looking at administrative data to look at the number of even healthcare encounters where screening it should be available, but it's not done. So I know there's another presentation with a late breaker looking at that kind of thing. We don't readily have that data. We are trying to look at administrative data more and more, but we don't have that data. And as to the impact of correctional screening, we actually are also trying to take a closer look at that. There's another presentation in a corrections symposium that illustrates some of the work we've done with Philadelphia and trying to assess their correctional screening program and the impact that's had on the community. Right. And I just one more plug for another symposium since you brought it up. There's a symposium on screening older women, those women 26 and older, tomorrow morning, if you want to talk more about that. Well, and I'm not going to try to rephrase your question since it was quite long, but we do try to share data as much as possible. For instance, the National Job Training Program is, I'm sorry, is a group that we work with to share data like that. All 50 states do have requirements to report data to us. Certain states are have different requirements, whether they be lab-based or provider-based. So, I'm so sorry. The best we can do is encourage providers and labs to fully report all of their data, regardless of insurance status. And we do, and I can't give you any specific, I mean, when I say non-STD clinic setting, in terms of reporting trends, it's everything across the board. Because, for instance, I don't know if Peace Corps has a specific facility, but I would guess their test results are funneled through their state. So, anyway, I think we might need to move on to the next presentation, and I'm about to lose my voice. So, thank you very much for your questions.